You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning. Good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. And you are listening today to Dr. Michelle Live. You're walking with me, actually. Today on Dr. Michelle Live, we have a big old muddy, rainy, stormy road out ahead of us, as we have right here in Southern California. Rain. So we're in for another 4 or 5 days. It feels, I've lived in the Northwest. I've lived all over the place. And it really feels like those days right now. And as I'm sitting here watching this happen, torrential rains. And so it really is fitting for our conversation today, as it has been the last few days, talking about childhood sexual abuse, adult sexual abuse, about the changes that happen in the brain. But like every rainy, stormy, dark, scary, slippery road that just you don't know whether you're going to make it or not, there's always the light. There's always a time. There's going to be a time. There's never been a time on this earth where it didn't stop raining. Ever. You might have had years of it. You might have had the dinosaur era where it's just wet, wet, wet. You may have had the desert time. It might have been the time in the earth where it was all oceans. But there's never been a time where at some point it didn't stop raining. Someone reminded me today. It was great, very early, like 6 o'clock in the morning. But someone reminded me today, they said, don't go back to Egypt. Don't go back to your Egypt. In other words, when you begin the walk out of slavery, whether it's a catapult or whether it's one little step, or just the beginning, the emerging, just that little walk out of slavery, the slavery of your heart, the chains around your soul, the things that keep you in fear, that keeps you locked away, the things you never thought of before, or you think you never thought of before, the things you've been so good at keeping under, you know, keeping control. Always have that little pot, that little top of the pot right on that boiling pot. Everything's been great, as long as we don't go too close. Or you might fight for the very things that have harmed you, which is oftentimes what God has us do in any way we can. We don't have to be the mavericks who write blogs or write books or have marches or make institutions. But in our way, we attest, we are living witness to having left Egypt. And we may walk through the desert and wander through the desert, but there's a time where we can come out of the desert. And that is the beauty. Now, all these questions come, and all these little bits and pieces, the shrapnel of life, they come in, they wound, they hurt, they maim. But somehow your desire and your drive is to recover. Your hard drive is to rise again. Rising from the dead. She's only sleeping. You've been dead 3 days. It could be 30 years. Get up. Over and over and over again. And part of us thinks, well, how can that even be? Because everywhere I looked, there was betrayal. My church betrayed me. My priest betrayed me. My parents betrayed me. My sister betrayed me. My brother betrayed me. The man I thought loved me betrayed me. The woman I thought loved me betrayed. Whatever it is, when you go into those horrendous things and you find out things, you send your child to school and your nice, sweet, young female teacher, who you consider to be very nurturing, is having sex with your child or having sex with someone else's child. That's pretty hair-raising. It changes life forever. Because it is so out of the ordinary. It is so out of order. And we are numb to the order of things now. We don't believe in the order of things now. We get ignited. We're charcoal lighter fluid on the coals of life. We are. Anything. Say the wrong word, we're marching on the wrong word. We're going to march for that. But what are we really marching for? What are we really doing? Where are we really put? Everybody's getting shamed. Everybody's getting, you can't breathe a word without having an onslaught starving bees coming to, or starving flies coming to your picnic. I mean, it doesn't, wherever you can't get it. It's like the storm of locust, only it's mental locust. It's ridiculous. And what does that do is that you all get picked off before you get a chance. You can't even get the toe out of the little prison cell because boom, someone's going to shame you for it or cut it off or tell you you're not right or you should have forgiveness or God was really with you or God just uses you and whatever. Good side, bad side. See, there is no God. Oh, look at God, what he did. All that is in the head. All that is speculation. All that is thing, places we go to, little shelters we try. And when we come down to the core, it's you and me walking this road of life, and we have our stories to tell, and we have different things that have happened to us, but they all kind of revolve around some of the same themes. So there are wonderful, amazing, this is why God's body is so awesome, because everybody has a different quirk. There are no two people alike, not even twins. There are no two people alike. God uses everybody and everything, and the quirkiest people are the most awesome people. The most misfit people are the most awesome people. There are colors, there are paintings, they come up with these things all throughout history, whoever had to think, oh yeah, maybe the earth isn't flat, or maybe there's something besides our little place of dirt that we live on, or gee, that color looks great if I just ground up this plant. Well, we have people like that all the time now in every facet, art, music, science, religion, looking at things and saying, ooh, hey, what about this? And I read to you, oh, I loved this person who had this, the woman, what's her name? She had her name is Catherine Geigler. Or Giggler, I don't know how to pronounce it, from Northwestern University, in the Cognitive Neuroscience Society Journal, the neuroscience of trauma from sexual assault. And she brought up something I had not really heard of. She had three little paradigms here that kind of like, okay, here's three little truths, little observations, whether they're truth or not, these are the observations. The number one observation is that when there's an adult, any kind of report of sexual violence, law enforcement oftentimes doesn't believe the stories. They think that there's lies, or you can't remember it correctly, or people, the victims get more victimized, which happens all the time. They found that the rate of false report in sexual violence, the rate, when they really looked at it, the rate of sexual violence, they don't describe whether it's childhood or adult, is actually low, estimated by most studies to be around 7%. Compare this is considerably lower than the rate of insurance fraud. So a false report of sexual violence is actually lower than the rate of insurance fraud. Moreover, research shows that sexual violence is in fact underreported, and we all know that. I just read a thing the other day about abortion being lower in this country than it has been since Roe versus Wade, as of yesterday. And I don't recall which report it was, so I don't know how reputable the report was, to be honest with you. It was a news story. First thing that came to my mind, well, of course, because we have now Plan B, or the morning after pill, that's on every shelf. So people will terminate or not allow their bodies to be impregnated, or actually they will terminate just by going off to CVS or whatever the local grocery store, because 10 years ago or 15, whenever it got introduced on a very different program, on a radio program that I had, I researched it because they were wondering, should the FDA even approve this? And I was researching it. And yes, it creates an environment in the body hormonally that will either not allow your body to be impregnated and or cause the environment to be so hostile that a fertilized egg will not implant. So you take it from there. We're not going to talk about that today. However, that was whether it was, should even be approved by the FDA. Then it was about, what do we do with it? Do doctors prescribe it? What? And I read you from the president of Planned Parenthood. This was too long ago. So in another radio station far, far away. But I read the quoted statements from the president of Planned Parenthood saying that their goal was to have this in every Quick Trip, every 24-hour market, every pharmacy, every completely over the counter of women of reproductive age, which can go as low as 11, 9, even 9, reproductive age in the world. So we're not talking about that today. I'm giving you an idea of the way that we process things, but we're going to go back to our topic on the other side of the break and more. So get your coffee. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I hope you have your coffee and your snacks and your rain boots, because we're walking on a muddy, dark, foreboding road, something into the darkest parts of humanity, the robbing of innocence, the betrayal of trust, the betrayal of innocence, the betrayal of love, we're the betrayal of intimacy. And the fact that these things continue on throughout life and what they do to your brain. However, great news. Our brain is way more plastic than we ever thought. Plastic meaning not the hard, brittle plastic, but meaning malleable, molding, plastic. Being plastic means that you're formable. You can go to all different kinds of shapes. So our brains are very plastic. They're not rigid. So even though I know you all know rigid plastic, because I certainly do. But there is really hope, big hope, not just hope, but good news. Because you're here now. And if you're listening to this and any of this applies to you or anyone you've ever known, or let's say you're weighing in on some opinion or some shaming moment, even maybe you might be the shamer or you might be the shamed, or you don't connect the dots. You have a sexual dysfunction, let's say, within your own marriage, and you do not connect the dots. There's a man many, many years ago in a northwest, who told the story, a military man, honored. No symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder to the obvious eye. Same wife, same family, same job, some anger issues. That's it. No psychiatric diagnosis other than these little explosive anger issues. Turns out, 30 years prior to this story being told, he had been raped by a commanding officer. Always unexpectedly, never known when it was going to happen, how it was going to happen, part of his job was to attend to certain things at any time, in the middle of the night, any time. That was part of the job. And he never knew. And when his time in the military stopped, he just went on with his life. Didn't doubt too much, try to push it out of his head, but had a lot of dysfunction in the marriage. A lot of dysfunction in the non-intimate side, but a lot of dysfunction in the intimate side as well. Never connecting the dots. Now, in some way, you think, well, okay, fine. Don't you like it better that way? I kind of do sometimes myself. It's like, okay, I'm okay the way I am. I learned how to do this. I don't want to go back. You don't have to go back. And we don't want you to go back and dwell in the past. However, understand the past. That's why I mean, really, when you say like, let it go, people say, just let it go. Let it go. That's in the past. That's in the past. Well, if that were true, why would we even need the Bible? You know, if you're very staunch Christians, let's say, who are hearing this right now, why do you even need the Bible to tell us about what was the past? Tell us what Christ did. He's living now. If you're that Christian, and he's in our hearts and he's all around. So why even worry about what happened back then? Because we need to know the story to put the pieces together so that 2,000 years later, in the lifetime of the humanity, we have an idea of why people are doing what they do, why we have faith, what's it all about? How can we have hope? Who said that? Why? What was the situation? We honor, we listen to people all the time who know Hebrew and Greek and Aramaic to try to get the exact words and the exact situation. Because history is important, and philosophers throughout have said, those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. Well, we remember history because it's all over. But what we do now is we have minimized and watered down the need for history so much that we just go, yeah, that's a big deal. And we walk on. That's a past. And we do that in our politics. We do that in everything. Everything. We just are so used to being lied to, literally lied to, by everybody. I mean, really. And this isn't some ranting. I mean, I told you, this is a little aside. And people could just hate me for this, but you can hate me and you can call me about it, 573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can say that I'm short-sighted. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can text, you can be anonymous, I don't care. But I'm telling you, huge grocery chains saying, we're now going green. We care about you. We care about the environment. We're no longer going to give you bags. You don't have plastic bags. Oh, but if you do, we charge you 10 cents. Do you know the billions of dollars they're going to save over a period of years by not giving their customers bags? So we go into the grocery stores now here in California, and everybody's going, I'm doing my part. And you have 50 items, every single one of which is encased in some form of plastic. If you get produce, you put it in a plastic bag. If you get a piece of gum, it's in plastic. If you get anything, coffee in a quote can, it's plastic. Chicken, plastic. Dog food, plastic. Or some kind of wasting source. Plastic. Plastic coating the very receipt you're handing me. And yet we're saving the environment by not giving me or anyone a little bag that, yes, can clog the waterways, but at one point in time, we had biodegradable bags. You all might remember that in the stores. It said these bags are biodegradable in a landfill. They would actually rot away. It's a lie. I walk into my store now, which is a huge chain. They own all kinds of stores with different names all throughout the world. I walk into my store and there's this great big sign, the first store to go green, you know, the first store to save the environment. And I'm going, nah, are you kidding? I'm walking in, I'm seeing five horrible things they call chickens in plastic in a energy wasting receptacle, roasted already. I see all your cheese in plastic. I see everything you give me, all your homemade biscuits and cupcakes and cookies, all in plastic. So you tell me, how are you going green? No, you're saving money and putting the burden on us. And eventually you will not need baggers anymore because there are no bags. So I see elderly people taking their load of groceries without a bag because they forget their big bag and taking it out and just one by one putting their little things from their cart into their car. And then they've got to take it out that way. And so do all the rest of us. So anyway, these are the little ways. I just want to give you some ideas to think critically. Now, you may think I'm completely wrong in that tiny little seemingly insignificant matter, but these little lies have big consequences. It gets us used to walking by the sign and going, yeah, I know, but we shove it down in our gut going, no, just tell me the truth. The truth is we found a way to not save you money because we're not going to charge any less. But by eventually getting rid of half of our employee force or a lot of our employee force, and we don't have to buy those giant pallets anymore of bags that are costing us hundreds of thousands per store every year. So we're saving billions of dollars over a period projected of 5 years. If I could show you how to save $1 billion over a period of 5 years or something like it, you know, let's look at the truth. Just give me the truth. Just put, you know what, our store is trying to put in our little wagon wheels here, and we're going to try to save money for our store. So we're not going to give this to you anymore, but we're going to provide these. You pay, you know, here's these nice, well-constructed bags, $3. You buy those, put your groceries in those. I would be so much more happier than to pretend that I'm actually doing something for the environment, that you really care about the environment. Because you have billions of these plastic containers for every single thing from salad to chicken to dog food to toilet paper all throughout your store? No. So we have to, even candy. So the point of this is, this does have to do with our subject. Because our subject matter is how we start just ignoring these things and how that changes our ability to call out the truth, even in little things, and it will go to big things. Now, when we return, we're going to return to our subject on sexual trauma, focusing, of course, on childhood, but the brain changes, the hope. Is there something a little different about those who are sexually traumatized when they are Christians, whether it's through their particular churches or not? We're going to look at that from some pretty interesting points of view. We're also going to look at some of the ways to heal. Because you will. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 5734 bread 4, 5734 bread 4. And I am talking to you today about the different aspects of childhood sexual abuse, the changes in the brain, the hopes that we can have, how it changes your relationships. On the second segment, related a story about a man, a very functional man, family, I don't even know what his socioeconomic class was, but it was good. Had a good house and, you know, just like the under the bell curve average American story. And the reality was there was a rape that had been that took place over a period of time as a young adult in the military that never was spoken of until about 30 years after it happened. Never spoken of, never brought up in the military, never brought up to a counselor, never brought up to a priest, never brought up to a wife, never brought up to a friend, nothing. Barely brought up to himself. And the only reason the story was known is because the one thing he did have an issue with and needed to get and went to get help with was anger. Anger. Now, is that the only thing? Like I said before, shrapnel. It's just one of the pieces of shrapnel, but it's a big one. And we all have this ether around us, all of us, because we just do things when we're kids. And, you know, we get into this situation and a janitor is a little inappropriate but not really too, quote, bad. And you just go to your class that day. You don't think about it. I remember sitting, a little girlfriend of mine, we were freshmen in high school, girls' school, Catholic girls' school, sitting in a curb one time, talking with her. We're just talking this and that and the other thing. And she talked about somebody she was in love with. We're like 14. And it was the babysitter. No, not the baby. She was the babysitter. And what had happened was there's Catholic, both of them Catholic families. She was a babysitter for this family, this young couple. To us, to me, it seemed old, but I'm sure they weren't. I don't know how old they were, but they were married and had a baby. And the guy used to do very inappropriate things to her on the way home, when he would take her home. The couple would come home. The dad would take her home. Never told her parents. Never thought anything other than she was in love. This is what happens. Little girls, little boys. Chances are, I have no idea. I was 13, 14 at the time. I just listened to her story like a little 13-year-old idiot, you know, just like we are. I'm just hearing it going, well, you know, but I don't even know what I thought. It was like one story out of a million that we were talking about, because there was no frame of reference. There was no knowledge. There was no nothing. So you see how these things can occur. But what happens is over time, somewhere in you, you know, this isn't right, but you don't understand how it's not right. You don't get anything. There's no, you don't get the age differences and this and that. You don't get anything. And the reason I tell you the stories about the big things and little things is I want you to connect the dots. I tell you about the supermarkets and that little lie the same way politically, no matter what you think. Way back in the world of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, my first thought, regardless of where you went down on the political scale, my first thought was, well, the feminists are really going to get up in arms about this one. Because it's a 21-year-old person and a 50-some-year-old president of the United States. If this was your grocery store and it was your 16-year-old after school and your and your 30-year-old manager of the fast food place that your teenager's working at, or let's say it's a 21-year-old and your 50-year-old manager, you would be really upset because you wouldn't say, well, those are two consenting adults. You would say, wait a minute, this is a power differential. Or it happens to women across the country today, yesterday, and will happen tomorrow. When they're in their classes with their professors, they have a crush, they're 22, the professor is 50, married, maybe even grandchildren, and they're somehow he starts romantically coming on to her, or she might to him because she doesn't know it. There's a power differential. There's a responsibility there. And somehow these women especially, but guys don't talk about this, but there's these women and guys, they're power differential, but they just go on to the next class. It just doesn't make sense to them unless there's an actual violent situation where the person's saying no and the other person's forcing themselves. Somehow we get into this blind eye. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And in our whole country, we did that. Two consenting adults, what's a big deal? Well, there is a big deal because there's something about responsibility. There's something about when you are in charge of something and it's your responsibility to be the trusted authority. It's your responsibility to be the teacher, because that, if nothing else, if all the other parts of it are taken away, all the other parts, you've violated a trust and you've betrayed any person's ability to trust a professor again, or to trust the president of the United States again, or any employer again. But the world goes, oh yeah, whatever, whatever, whatever. They paint the whatever picture they want. And what happens to the person? The person is lost and they have to go with it the best they can. So this segment, though, I want to go back. So this is why I tell you all these things that seem like, okay, wow, we're going over here to paper bags and or plastic bags. And here we're going over here to Planned Parenthood. And here we're going to the president. And there's no political thought in this. I'm just talking to you because these are big news stories. And they have charged emotions on both sides. But when you come down to what is the fundamental core here, I want to get across that if you just, it's like that old adage, the first time I ever saw that sign, to serve you better, we are going to. And then you realize they're not serving you better at all. In fact, it's much worse than it was before they decided to serve you better. Because when they start saying, I'm going to serve you better, watch out, because chances are something's going to be more expensive or they're going to have less service. I mean, that's just the way it seems to work. So now, I'm going to read you this article as I think it will say it all. This is the neuroscience. So we're going to get the emotional. We're going to get the law enforcement side. We're going to get the neuroscience. I read a little bit of it on yesterday's podcast. You can go over to redboxmedia.podbean.com, scroll over Dr. Michelle Live, click on that and get yesterday's podcast to see the part that I picked out. But this is the whole article. It says, quote, I believe that you believe something happened to you, unquote. The young woman repeated the detective's statement to me again. It had been the detective's response to her question of whether he believed her account of the brutal sexual assault she had experienced the past weekend. As a counselor on the local rape crisis hotline, it was not the first time I had heard such a demoralizing story of an individual's attempt to report sexual violence to a law enforcement. Because her story had been disjointed and she had stumbled over several sections of it, the detective had thought she was confabulating, creating a crime where none had occurred. When I hear of this dynamic, my thoughts often turn to neuroscience of trauma. Now, this woman is a professor at Northwestern University. She's also in charge of a research group that deals with this Dr. Geigler, or she's a doctoral student with the brain changes in trauma. The brain's response to trauma is complex, and human behavior in response to trauma, particularly sexually violence, is not well understood. But recent research does offer some important insights. Okay, now that's when I told you at the beginning of the program today that the sexual violence false reporting is really very low. We think we've worked on the assumption as a country and probably on a world that is actually high. People accuse when it's not there. It's actually the reverse. False stories are found only to be around 7%. And that's probably a little exaggeration. And the sad thing is that sexual violence is underreported. As I was giving you these stories of the man and the woman and the girl and Monica Lewinsky or whatever, we get these things that are underreported or shined on. Many more incidences of violence occur than are reported to law enforcement or other legal authorities. Studies show that there are many factors that may predict whether an individual will report, including level of acquaintance with the perpetrator and whether alcohol was consumed. Now, we kind of extrapolate from that and say most people are very reluctant to report any kind of sexual impropriety when they know the person, especially that person is an uncle or a father or a grandfather, you know, sweet grandfather or a priest or a preacher or a teacher. A lot of times it's very, very, you just don't do it. So we are coming to a close of this section. So I want to let you keep that in mind as we get to the other side of the break. But I want you to know that if there was any kind of somebody's smoking marijuana or they had a drink or whatever, they're even more reluctant because then they start feeling the blame and shame. It was my fault. So we come back from the break. We're going to finish this. We're going to show you why and how. Not only is there hope, but there is healing and there is even a way better life on the other side of acknowledging the truth. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4-BREAD-4, and we got a text from someone thanking us for the rosary. And you know what, guys, it is awesome, this rosary. I'm telling you, get on Rugged Rosaries, and for your code, if you want to buy something, Dr. Michelle, DrMichelle, all caps, and you'll get a, I think they're giving a 10% discount, but these really are the most unique rosaries. I really have not seen any like them. And I'm just so, I got mine 2 years ago and it just dawned on me last week, I'll give them away. So I had a week long giveaway, but I'm telling you, and then for doing that, the Rugged Rosaries said, they will give 10% discount. I think it's 10 now, to anyone who types in as their code for the discount code, DrMichelle, all caps. Just get on their website and look, because they've got very cool things. And I want to get the bracelet, but they were out of stock because it's a small group of people in the Midwest, I think, who do this, and they're awesome. And look at their story. All right. So let's get back to this, because this is our last segment, and I was meant to get so much further today. But I think this is a great article because it brings in everything. This lovely lady, I don't know her, Catherine Geigler, I don't know, from Northwestern University. She is a, let me get down here and see what she does, actually. She's a doctoral candidate, so PhD candidate. She studies the cognitive neuroscience of learning and memory. But she's got a little special interest in this trauma. She also serves as director of the Women's Center at Elizabeth City State University. And she has written for the Huffington Post as well. And I wanted to get to that article because it was less scientific, but I like the scientific. So here we go. So she's talking about how she said this false reporting people that happens about 7%. Okay. Taken together, research findings on the the factually low rate of false report and on the underreporting of the crime itself demonstrate a clear contradiction in people's conceptions of sexual violence and that violence in reality. A lot of people don't understand. I've known grown men in the health profession who say that that men rape good-looking girls. They're still somehow, with all their education, they somehow think it's sexual. This is not a sexual violence, but it's not about sex. It's about violence, control, rage. It's violence. It's a violent crime. That's what it is. It's a crime. But it is not, it is using, it's just like stabbing someone's not about a knife. It's a violent crime. That was a bad analogy. So let me go on. Let me see what she has to say. She's saying it really good. So she said there is a mismatch between media portrayals of, quote, ideal victims, unquote, sober, young, attacked at knife point, women in parking lots at night. That's, quote, the ideal victim. And research on real world victims, nearly three quarters of whom know the perpetrator, rising to nearly 90% on college campuses. 90%. And I myself have known female medical doctors, they're already graduated, but they're doing their residencies, who have date rape by other residents or attending physicians. I've known them. They've never reported it because they are afraid. They are afraid. They would never report it because they figured they would never continue on with their life. So they just swept it under the rug, or so they thought. And only 7% of whom were attacked with a firearm, knife, or weapon. The kind of misunderstanding of an individual's experience of sexual assault is heartbreakingly common. A high school student's report of sexual assault was viewed skeptically by an elected lawmaker who stated on the public record that, quote, some girls, they rape so easily, unquote. More recently, a fan base made it clear that it did not believe a woman accusing a sports hero of rape and that she was making the story up for attention. Why are victims so often not believed? A large amount of this disbelief may be linked to the behavioral patterns of victims themselves, which can vary widely from case to case and often include behaviors of which the average police detective would be skeptical. Now, add in there. Average police detective, add in their mother, father, sister, brother, teacher, priest, fellow friend. You're exaggerating. They never did that. How many of you, and I'm raising my hand in there, I gave you my story of that one girlfriend. Well, I've had lots of little girlfriends from as long as I can remember, from probably the age 9 up, talking about spending nights over somebody else's house and having a brother come in to a room or having a father come into the room and telling their friend and the friend telling their parent and the parent going, well, no, that didn't really happen, or not. The parent can't believe it. So they just assume the little girl was making it up. She wasn't making it up, most likely. Again, I was little too, so I didn't understand any of it. You just go on with life. So if it's happening in my life all around me when I'm thinking back, not even thinking about it, it's happening in all your lives. And that's when yesterday we talked about, get on there and look at that program, Tonic Immobility, which is really important. That's a new area of research, relatively new, because it's on the human response to trauma. The tonic immobility, it's self-paralysis. That's how it's defined. That deer in the headlights, I couldn't move. You hear all the time, attackers, why didn't you run away? I couldn't move. You just don't think. Or somebody who's in an abusive relationship and you got to face that husband, even in any kind of situation, they freeze up. And then they look like they have nothing to say. And so they appear as if they're judged to be exaggerating. So she says, additionally, due to an entire cascade of hormonal changes, which includes oxytocin and opiates associated with pain management, adrenaline, common known as flight or flight, and cortisol, connectivity between the different areas of the brain is affected. Therefore, again, you short circuit. So what does she go on to say? The research shows the majority of individuals who experience sexual assault demonstrate at least some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder immediately after, and then definitely through 2 weeks following the assault. 9 months after the assault, 30% do. Now, these are just what she's studying now. We're going to go on. These findings are complicated by the fact that the response of any given person to trauma can look extremely different. That's what I want you all to know. Yours isn't going to look like someone else. You're going to move on with your life, or someone else is going to get a mental illness or an autoimmune disease or start acting out, be promiscuous, be totally reclusive. You do it in all different kinds of ways. Eating disorders, big time. Because you numb out, maybe multiple abortions, because you're numbing out. You numb out to any kind of stress. Your body doesn't care. Your body doesn't care anymore. Your mind doesn't care. You see a threat or a puzzle, a mental puzzle that seems kind of freaky to you, you numb out. You dissociate, either strongly to where it gets attention by the mental health professions, or not so strongly, but you still numb out. You're not as responsive as you need to be to your children's needs, your own needs, your husband's needs, your world's needs, and especially your needs. As with many questions related to health, it is difficult to pinpoint the exact cause. Existing neurobiological and psychosocial risk factors, such as mental illness, can contribute to the development of PTSD. So now listen to that. If you have had, you hear in another room because you're a child and it's happening to your older sister or brother, if you happen to numb that out, you can start getting depressive symptoms or anxiety symptoms that are treated as individual problems. But yet, so therefore, when something shocking happens to you, you have a bigger chance of getting post-traumatic stress disorder. Now we're getting to the close of this program, but I want you to go home tonight with this particular thought. There is no hard and fast rule of victimology. Every individual who experiences sexual violence will respond differently, period. Therefore, the detective who was unable to believe the story told to him by my crisis caller was likely misinterpreting the discrepancies in her stories as lies. So we misinterpret these things as lies, exaggerations, or what do we all do? As little children, our little children come to us and they tell us something and we just think it's their mind not getting, we need to start believing. Look with an eye of skepticism. Maybe it is true. Leave it open. Maybe it is true. And if it's welling up in you now, again, I want you to begin down the road of getting some professional help to explore the issues that might be coming in to you right now, to open up to know that our brains will heal. Our brains, we won't forget, but we will heal and we will be better and we will be more open. And you can trust again. You can open up to yourself again. This is what you need to realize. It's a lot of times the mistrust of the outside world is about not trusting ourselves because we blame ourselves. So we're going to get rid of the blame. We're going to open up and know that you can heal.